Okay, everyone, welcome to episode 8 of 4 J's and a Comic. Returning with us tonight is JP from pandamanga.com.
The universe is a person.
What?
Did you not read the comic?
Captain Universe.
Yeah, but I don't remember that part.
We've just come back from eating a mass amount of food, and I think all of us are a little punchy right now.
A little bit. Yeah, I wouldn't be punching food anybody drunk in this room right now.
And then we have Joe Vicious.
Hello.
And finally, last but not least, Justin Woods from AskAMetalhead.com.
How's it going?
And with you, as always, I'm John Harder from Waterfront Comics.
That was the least metal greeting ever. How are you?
How you doing?
How you doing? Say hello to your mother for me.
That's a little more metal.
Yeah. Tonight, we had an ambitious plan.
Very at the last podcast. Yeah.
With Marvel's new Infinity crossover event launching, we were going to get caught up on the Avengers and read issues 1 through 17 of the new The Avengers series and 1 through 8 of New Avengers. We all failed spectacularly.
I almost made it. Almost. I was like 6 short of finishing.
It's one of
that's something you never want to hear from your girlfriend.
Well, I mean, it was what, 20-something?
25 comics, yeah. And normally we do about 12. So where we all ended up was right about the average. Right.
Yeah, about that.
So tonight we're going to modify that and do New Avengers issues 1 through 6 and Avengers issues 1 through 6, which were both the first trade paperbacks of the run.
Oh, that works then. Now I don't feel like such a slacker.
We all just had really busy stuff going on this week.
Dude, this last week was crazy.
And plus, the 100-degree heat with 100% humidity that we had throughout the week was kind of...
It was brutal, man.
Yeah.
Well, we're like finally getting the heat at the end of the summer.
This is a fairly dense read as well, admittedly.
Yes.
Yeah, yes, it's as heavy as the humidity. Very,
yeah.
So during our little pre-show get-together, we usually don't go into too much about what we thought to save it for up here.
Yeah, we call it save it for the podcast, yeah. SFTP.
But I was talking to Justin and then later JP, is for this being new number ones and a new launch of the series, and both are fairly familiar with the Avengers from the movies and know the characters, who some of the characters are. They had quite a few questions about characterizations and events and what the hell was going on.
Yeah, it was kind of like the WTF sort of situation. It's like reading it like, what? Who is this person? I've never heard of this guy before.
So a lot of the podcast tonight will be me and Joe explaining just what the hell was going on.
Very likely.
And
where you need to start to catch up with the new books.
So it should be an interesting hour. So we're going to start with New Avengers, which chronologically came first. As you get a few hints from the first couple issues of the Avengers series. Even though the New Avengers didn't start till a couple months after Avengers came out. So in the New Avengers series, we are reintroduced to the Illuminati of the Marvel Universe. The Illuminati was introduced about 6 or 7 years ago by Brian Bendis in his run of Avengers, where basically it's a retcon of there's 5 people that basically have been controlling what's going on. Reed Richards from the Fantastic Four, Professor X from the X-Men, Namor,
King of Atlantis, Black Bolt, the King of
Black
the
Bolt,
Humans,
and
Iron Man. A big group of very influential and in some cases very powerful, but not in others, right? I mean, there are guys that are pretty varying power levels in that group, right? But they all have a strong influence.
Well, you figure that you have the 2 smartest people in the world with...
Right.
Iron Man and Reed Richards, the ruler of the seas with Namor,
the Sorcerer Supreme, Doctor Strange.
We're introduced to them because we're reintroduced to them because there's a giant multi-universes destroying event happening, and for them to figure out how to stop it. And taking over to Justin, when you were first reading this, you were telling me that, you know, I have no idea who these people are.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot to come in and have even just five characters to try to sort of catch up on. But there's conflicts between the characters that you don't understand. And it is, you know, in this, for coming into a comic, and the very first thing I'm reading for them is that there is this massive universe shift that's happening. It's a fairly, I mean, it's sort of like, couldn't you guys just fight one of the bad guys? Like, couldn't the new dive into it be like a really simple, let's define who the bad guys are, like the villains. Let's define who the villains are and go fight one of those guys. Instead, it's, okay, our two universes are going to collide unless we figure out a way to keep them from colliding. And it's this chain domino effect of colliding universes. And it's, you know, they diagram it out, which actually is some of the interesting art in the comic book. But Jesus Christ, man. You know, I'm a smart guy, but I had to reread a couple of the pages to go, what the hell are they talking about?
And then even sometimes after you read it and you're like, oh, I understand as well as I could what they're saying. Some of the things they're saying on there, it's like, I don't really know what they mean by that.
When does the Hulk beat something up? Come on.
To take a step back, which I should have mentioned this earlier, both books are written by Jonathan Hickman, who burst on the scene about 5 or 6 years ago. And his comics have big ideas in them, big.
So is this, because I was going to ask, not to interrupt, because that was one of the things that I had made a note for myself to ask you was, are these universes so old, like, you know, Marvel's comic characters, are they just so old that, you know, they've gone beyond the point where there's one villain that they're sort of going to fight and, you know, he wants, you know, $1 billion and he wants to take over the world? Because it seems to me in both of these trades, they're these massive universe changing, you know, and like in one of them, in the other Avengers series, which we'll talk about later, you know, they kind of go through this event that happens where it's destroying all of these universes itself, right? There's these like control stations out in some dreaming ether. And you know, little old me, I was like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, where's the simplicity?
Well, I think that might be one of the challenges that's in the very nature of the idea of doing a supergroup. You know, it's Earth's mightiest heroes, right? I mean, like, how are we going to have Earth's mightiest heroes go up against Doc Ock? Or go up, you know what I mean? Like, just one dude who can be enough of trouble for one hero or maybe a handful of heroes or B-list heroes and whatnot in a city to make an interesting story. But you've got the Hulk, Thor, Iron Man, and then in these, it just goes on and on. And you've got these guys that are just the heaviest hitters on the planet. You're going to have to dream up something that is big enough for them to be challenged. Because nobody wants, you know, some guy to be like, I want $1 million. And then, you know, the Hulk to come by and be all, and flick him and be done. Right. Like, that's not interesting, right?
And oddly, as I ask that question, I think to myself, here you are sort of lamenting about this massive environment that you have to sort of read about and understand and all of this scientific mumbo jumbo. And I'm asking a pretty fundamental question, which is why don't comic book creators kill their villains at this level? Why do you see the same villains over and over again? Why is there, name a villain that's still around?
Dr. Doom.
Okay, so why is Dr. Doom still around? Why haven't they just killed this guy?
They have.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
That's the thing of it. In comics, people die and come back on a regular basis.
But you can kill a villain. If you kill a villain, you end the storyline for that villain. But that's your vehicle to bring in new villains. That's where you get change. That's where you keep the story going is, you know, you defeated a villain and another villain came up or came from some other place. And, you know, again, I think we're getting off topic, but that was one of the things that came up to me because obviously I read these back to back and then I was like, wow, man, these are like really massive, massive ideas for.
Yeah. Large scale stories for sure. Yeah.
Which aren't, it's not bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining, but.
Yeah, but well, it you almost have to sit back in your seat and go like, man, I can't see the edge of the screen.
Right.
Yeah. That's actually one of the big things that I think Marvel is probably really well known for is that they can't just do the I want $1 billion thing anymore because they've had to make their villains human. They've actually had to make them interesting. And
I have that in parentheses. Is it because of the phenomenon of Watchmen? Where I think Watchmen, back in the day when it first came out, it was the first comic book that really put its heroes in. It gave them sort of some gray area, right? Like, yeah. That's the big paradigm shift in comics, was that Watchmen made the heroes not, like, they're not all perfect.
Mm-hmm. And the villain isn't twiddling a mustache.
Right.
You know, they actually have motive for why they're trying to take over the world.
And that was the other thing that I got out of this, was there really is, in both of these stories, which are good, there's no villain. There's no bad guy. There's just a protagonist who you can relate to completely at some level. And they're not really super bad guys. Right. I mean, it's just, this is this guy's perspective on something. This is the way he's designed, right? So
these two stories, the events are so cosmic.
Oh, they're huge. They're massive.
You're dealing with, you know, multiverses being destroyed.
Right, right.
And mm-hmm. new Avengers.
Unless you have a degree in string theory, this is...
But kudos to them to be able to take some of that really, really high-level scientific stuff and make it readable, though it is a bit dense. It is readable, and, you know, as long as you get the gist of it, you will understand what's going on.
So, getting started, when we were down...
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, earlier, we were talking about how you felt it was kind of imprintable, you know, for a new reader that's, you know, getting into these books for a issue one of a first trade. And we'll kind of go through that about... You had a lot of questions about who are these characters, and they weren't, like, laid out, and...
Right. I mean, I know who Iron Man is, and I understand... You know who Tony Stark is, and I know who Captain America is, but I don't know who, you know, Black Bolt is, the Midnight King. And my first question is, what is his special power? Because he has this, like, football go-post or tuning fork on his forehead.
Oh, and so, good thing John Fultz isn't here.
Yeah, I actually invited him to do this because he's a huge Jonathan Hickman fan, and he loves these books.
And he's a huge Inhuman fan.
And I was hoping we could kind of get his take on it, you know, as someone who loves these characters.
I don't hate them. I just don't know who the hell they are.
Yeah.
The last time I read a book with Black Bolt in it, he blew up and tore a hole in the fabric of space and time.
That wasn't very nice.
Well, he did it to stop a war.
So the very first question I asked you, which is what I think you're getting at, is why are... Black Panther and Namor, the submariner, right? Why are they, throughout this series, they fight. They don't fight, but they have conflict. There's definitely problems between them. And I couldn't understand why, if they're in the Illuminati, why you have this massive shift between these two.
And that's a fair question. Coming into a number one issue, you would hope that was explained. The reason is because this launched out of Marvel's last big event, Avengers versus X-Men. And in there, Namor is possessed by the Dark Phoenix, and he goes on a rampage destroying Wakanda, the country that the Black Panther is the king of. But there's no way for you to know that in here, unless you've read that. There's no, like, recap page on that. When I was growing up reading comics, there always used to be, like, a little footnote box in there, like a little starlight.
Right. Yeah, the editor would put a little note in, and it's like, this happened, and blah, 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 yeah.
And that's something that you don't see now in Marvel, in modern comics at all.
Yeah.
Because I guess they figure everyone can just go to Wikipedia and be like, why does Namor hate the Black Panther?
Yeah, I was beginning to realize that so much of this is going to require research. Like, if you came into this not knowing any of these characters, or having maybe just seen the Avengers movie or something,
right,
you would be totally blown away.
Because at this point, we're not even really, is it fair to say, we're not even really at the Avengers level yet. I mean, we're really the Illuminati, because there are...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's no... at this point, again, you know Captain America and you know Stark. The other guys are... They seem to... Yeah, I've never even... They would have never been on my sort of...
Radar.
List of dudes that are in... Well, Mr. Avengers, right?
Your dude, you know, Mr. Fantastic, the Fantastic Four, got a movie a while back.
By himself?
Well, no, the Fantastic Four.
And that was actually the other question I asked, was why is only he included? But then John explained, Illuminati, it's like, you know, it's the top of the food chain.
Smartest man in the world kind of thing.
Right.
Moving on through this comic, we're basically introduced to the Illuminati, And the reason why they need to exist, and it's because there's these universe-destroying things happening that will soon destroy our universe. And then there, originally Captain America is part of them, and they all have the Infinity Gems, which Justin, again, had no clue. He's like, what are these gems that they all have? So I had to explain.
Also, each one of them has one of the, right.
Yeah, so I had to explain to him, you know, basically a quick rundown of a 20-year-old crossover, the Infinity Gauntlet and Thanos and and the Infinity Gems. And again, no mention of this in any of the books. So, I mean,
there's a lot of moments where something comes up and it's framed in a certain way where it's clear that this character appearing or this item that they have is meant to have impact, but it happens and I'm kind of like, I don't get it.
There's somebody picked this up and was reading through it and was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is the raddest thing ever, because they did that, right? Mm-hmm. Some guy that read the comic 20 years ago, perhaps even John.
It was me.
But
it was me too.
Captain Average Joe over here, you know, me. No, not Captain Average Battle X. Me, Captain Average Justin.
Because I read it.
You know, I'm sort of like, okay, so you have a power glove.
What does it do?
Yeah, it's like if I suddenly stood up and said, you know, guys, I have a Fuzzlewinger. You'd be like, oh, that's great.
What? Yeah, I missed that Kickstarter, sorry. Not in a cheesy way, but, you know, each one of them has a particular gem. Why does one guy have the time gem and the other guy has the whatever gem? You know, there wasn't really an explanation of that, so it'd be kind of neat to have that thought. And, of course, I'm assuming that perhaps, actually, you know, I can't even make an assumption as to why they left some of the things out on here, because there are comics that we've read that they even give you a little bit of the background, you know?
Yeah. Like the Hawkeye series. You could have jumped into any single one of the issues of Hawkeye and gotten a full recap and been up to speed.
Yeah, this, out of all the comics we've read, this is easily these two are the ones that require the most previous knowledge of the universe and the characters in the series to be able to fully appreciate what's going on.
So I guess what we're trying to say is it's kind of impenetrable to get into these, even though it's new number ones.
My takeaway was just plow through it. I mean, it's definitely much more frustrating because it's not laid out there for me in the book that I'm reading. I'm going to have to go on Wikipedia and look up names. I'm going to have to Google some stuff. I'm going to have to, you know, or even just kind of power through and let the drama that's happening right now be what I care about, and all the auxiliary stuff that I could be gleaning some, you know, nerd knowledge and like, oh, that's cool, I can't believe they put that in there, if I knew what was going on. But even if I don't, the story itself that's happening right now with the catastrophes that are going on, and
it's pretty interesting. Exciting.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting enough on its own to be able to hold my attention. But there's so many characters that I'm not familiar with that it's either, you know, suck it up and look it up, or just roll with it.
Okay, so take the conflict between Black Panther and Namor. They do eventually sort of get to it, like four books later. Like when you first have them sort of, there's a moment where they're talking about being angry at each other. And a couple books later, they kind of get to like some sort of, you know, they're, one of them is sort of vacillating between wanting to accept a peace agreement or not. And in my head, I was like, this is the weirdest thing to be reading about in the context of what's going on. Like, if you were going to inject human drama, this is not like how I would think to do it. Mm-hmm. But even in getting to it, I don't feel like they completely, I didn't get out of the story that Namor was, possessed. Yeah. If you would have said, look, I know you were possessed, but, you know, this was a huge thing. And like, I would have been like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense why they're fighting.
Yeah.
Like in one panel.
Yeah. The little bit they explained, it was like, oh, Namor's a dick.
Exactly.
No, he's that too, but
definitely that. But it's like, yeah, I flooded your entire country, but you know what? I'm not into that anymore. Can we just be friends?
So, going to you, Joe, since you're familiar with the characters, mm-hmm. and the storyline, how did you enjoy the first six issues of New Avengers?
I actually really enjoyed it. The story got very dark.
Because, and is someone also, me and knowing the characters, I really enjoyed the story as well. You know, I had the little squeal nerd moments.
Did you really squeal?
No. That Justin and JP didn't get. Yeah. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, there's knowing the characters and knowing the backstory of the Illuminati and how they were always trying to save the rest of their people from these big, like, earth-shattering decisions, how they wanted to take it on themselves because they only trusted themselves to be able to handle this because they're the smartest people in the world. Jack-offs.
What I liked in there was how they mind-wiped Captain America. So,
oh, yeah. He was the last one with any sort of, like, honor or reason. It's like, no, we are not going to destroy other people's worlds to save our own. We're not going to do it. We'll find a way around it. We're not going to take the shortcut. And I think the Black Swan is... She's been alluding to stuff like that throughout her captivity by the Illuminati. She mm-hmm. said, it takes away all your honor. It takes away the last of you that is human. And she keeps saying that. And I think Captain America was the last one. It's like, no. We're not going to do this. But finally, they start blowing up the other Earths to save their own.
Well, didn't they start with one that was barren and dead because they...
Oh, yeah. It's a slow burn to it.
Right, right.
It's like, okay, we can... Oh, wait, no. Galactus destroys this one. Okay. We made it out of that one.
You know, I honestly... Oh,
this one's already dead. Yeah, that's fine.
Well, yeah, it gave them an easy moral decision to make. The planet's dead. There's no life form. Okay, go ahead and destroy it. Then they're not really... It kind of keeps them morally clean. Mm-hmm. But... I am learning just now about this Captain America brain wipe thing, and I just read the comic book, and I'm not... When did that happen? Because I don't remember.
Issue 3?
Okay.
And then it's alluded to in the Avengers series when, like, the first couple pages when Captain America is talking to Iron Man, he's like, I keep having these weird dreams, and it shows the picture of the Illuminati in the background.
Yes, that makes much more sense now.
But, I mean, again, it's something that was so... minute and nerdy that you have to have, you know, like 25 years of Marvel reading to, I think, kind of catch that stuff.
Now, do you feel like those things constitute such a lion's share of the enjoyment of the book that it diminishes a new reader's ability to appreciate it? Or do you feel like it can carry its own and those are just icing?
See, that's what's a really interesting point to me is, it's been years since I was a new reader, so I just assume, you know, everyone knows as much about this stuff as I do. And that's mm-hmm. what's kind of interesting coming from you and Justin, is you are new, brand new readers, and Justin was like, who's this purple guy? And I'm like, it's Galactus. Don't you know that? Well, no, where would I have seen Galactus before?
Yeah.
You know, and...
Yeah, I don't think that... The knowledge gap really diminishes the story.
No, I don't believe so.
The little Easter eggs in there that are making the, you know, the nerdgasms kind of pop up.
Those are nerd boners. Nerdgasms come later.
Thank you. Wow. So the nerd boners that you get from, you know, seeing the Infinity Gems or Galactus or Thanos, that's not what's really driving the story. What's really driving the story is these characters that are trying to be, you know, the saviors of the universe. You know, they're taking on this huge burden. Watching them slowly descend into people that are willing to, you know, blow up somebody else's planet to save their own. I think that's where the really interesting drama is coming
from. Yes, I agree.
Well, I just had an epiphany while you were explaining how you've kind of know this stuff because you've read it for a long time, and it hit me. How do you reboot a series and not alienate the original readers who helped make that series a success? And the way you do that is you throw in that stuff. This is a balancing act is what they're doing here. They're creating new stories. They're not necessarily reinventing the characters, but they're expanding the characters in a way that you, the experienced longtime reader, can read it and go, all right, cool. They're sticking to the roots a little bit, right? Like I catch this, right? There's stuff that they bring back. But then me, the new reader, when I read it, there's enough in there that I'm not totally lost, but there is some question. And my hope would be that in future episodes or future books, they'll kind of get back to that a little bit. Because frankly, I'm not going to go look at Wikipedia on something like this. I mean, I did for Saga because I fucking love Saga. that comic book had me by the throat from the very first, you know, like the very first panel. And I would for Chew too.
But the thing about Saga was it was all there. You knew it was all introduced right there. You didn't need to know 25 years of history because it's all right
that's,
there.
That's the thing.
Plus about, it doesn't have 25 years of history.
Right, but that's the thing about something that is all new is that, and this is a literary device that a good writer will use, is he will have something come through or present something chronologically out of order on purpose, and you have to have faith that it'll all make sense eventually. But sometimes when, I guess what I'm saying is, when it's a new story, it's safe to assume that eventually it'll all come together and it'll all make sense. But if it's something that's been so long and ongoing, that safety net of, well, you know, obviously that they're going to have to explain what that is because nobody knows what this is. There's no way for anybody to have figured out or have previous knowledge of this thing that they're being vague about right here, or that they're showing out of sequence or something like that, because this is the first time it's ever shown up in comic book form or in any form whatsoever. But when it's an ongoing series, something comes up and that same feeling of kind of like, wait, what was that? You don't get that safety net of like, oh, it'll all work out. They'll explain it, because they don't sometimes.
Well, yeah. And that's what juxtaposing into the Avengers book, that was all brand new. And I liked how through the book he explained, how Hickman explained these new characters that he introduced.
Right.
That nobody knew. Even, you know, me with the 25 years of reading history, and Joe, who's, you know,
about very 15 years.
So the Avengers one, it started on Mars with new people wanting to terraform Mars and the Earth. Mm-hmm.
That's the first time we've ever seen those guys.
Yeah, we'd never seen any of those characters before. Okay.
No, the bad guys, anyway.
Yeah. And then, your standard Avengers team is going out there to take care of it. The Captain America, the Iron Man.
Yeah. Straight
out of the movie. And this threat is bigger than they can handle.
Oh, it handles them. Kicks their asses.
I mean, it would be like you and me going up against whatever deity we worship and getting our asses handed to it.
Right.
And realizing that they needed to be bigger. So then you're introduced to all these new characters, which I knew probably about 90% of them. There was still probably about 10% that I didn't know.
Is this Manifold guy supposed to be Gateway?
He was actually introduced in Hickman's Secret Avengers.
Okay.
Secret Warriors.
Oh, Secret Warriors.
The Nick Fury one.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that because I didn't read that series, so it sent John to Wikipedia to look it up. And
he seems like a pretty cool character. Like, his abilities could be mean.
Yeah. So in that Avengers book, we're introduced to a bunch of new characters, and there's these giant, bigger-than-global threats that require basically a small army of Avengers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like how they keep flashing back to Steve Rogers and Tony Stark hanging out in the Avengers Tower, thinking about something's coming. You can feel it. Something bigger is coming, and we need to prepare for it so that when this big problem does happen, they're not, you know, caught with their pants down, basically. And I liked how very chopped up and rearranged the timeline was with this. It was very, very bold writing, I think. Very, very confident that they would jump around a lot like that, and it would still, and have faith that the reader could keep up and it would make sense. And at times it strained a little bit, a lazy level of reading attention to be able to appreciate and understand where the timeline was and where we were in this scene in comparison to the scene we were just in. But it all makes sense. And I thought that was one of the strong points, is that it required your attention. It was really interesting how they were popping around like that. And they could tell an interesting story and make you, you know, care about a character. I don't know. I thought it was really well done, that kind of jumping around chronologically, especially when they introduced Firebrand later on. It was very cool.
Starbrand.
Sorry.
Starbrand.
Starbrand. Yeah. So that just because they start showing the school and everybody around there, and you start to be like, okay, which one of these characters am I supposed to pay attention to?
Am I supposed to watch all of them?
Right. And then the next thing you know, kaboom. You know, it's kind of like, oh, shit.
And it shows him in the background of like every
single, and it's like, he was there. You just didn't see him. Yeah, that was really
slick. Right. That was cool.
Yeah.
Kevin.
I think, isn't there a star brand in like the early Guardians of the Galaxy comics?
Pulling out my nerd hat.
All right.
Starbrand was introduced in 85 for Marvel's 25th anniversary, they started what was called the New Universe.
That's where I remember.
Where they launched about 10 new titles, and it was different Earth than the standard Marvel 616. Mm-hmm. And that was their flagship book. It was Starbrand. Mm-hmm. And since then, it's been revealed that the Starbrand exists in all universes, and it was in Quasar for a while and been going around it. But that's where it originally came through.
Okay.
And I didn't need Wikipedia for that. Just man, years and years of nerd knowledge.
Now, is Starbrand being one of these powerful creatures, or I guess beings, being one of these powerful beings that is supposed to be around and involved in this apocalyptic event of some kind, is that something that's been plotted out before, or is this all new? Because as they're talking about it, they're like, well, you need this, this, and this, and you have to have these people to hear, you know, and, you know, this person is the Harbinger, and it seems almost like they're coming across, and they're like, well, yeah, this is how it works.
I don't think we've seen it before, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, in Hickman's thing, it's happened.
Right. That's how it goes. Okay.
I liked some of the, not really B-list, but the characters that, oh yeah, I remember Hyperion. I remember Smasher from the Imperial Guard. Yeah,
Joe had to explain to me who Hyperion was, because he's kind of like, who is this guy? He's crazy powerful.
It's Superman, essentially.
Which is great, because...
Yeah, I thought, was this a ripoff of Superman was the first thing I thought.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so can you go into that
explain
again?
Explain to the
then?
Whole...
Yeah.
Can you? But also, can you do me a favor while you're explaining that? Can you explain... Because he sort of has this inner monologue where he's like, Hyperion has... There's two Hyperions. There's the one that everybody sees, and then there's this one that he buries deep inside of himself. Cover that, too.
All right. So, the Squadron Supreme was... What'd they come out of? Like, 77?
Early 70s. Basically, it was a joke between... Yeah. Marvel writers and DC writers. The Marvel people put in a version of Justice League into Avengers. And in Justice League, they put in, you know, a knockoff version of Avengers for that month.
Did they?
Yeah.
I never caught that. But the Squadron Supreme stuck around because it you know, it's a tongue-in-cheek, oh, our Hyperion is visitor from another world with super strength, flying, heat vision. And they had their Batman character, Wonder Woman. They had their own Green Arrow and Green Lantern. But eventually, they started to interact more and more. And by the 80s, had their own book.
Well, in the 80s, Justin talks a lot about Watchmen.
Yeah.
And that was DC's, you know, breakout book. Marvel had the Squadron Supreme 12-issue miniseries, which was their kind of jump-forward book. Hmm. It hasn't had the legs that Watchmen has. I think a lot because the creator Mark Gruenwald that wrote it died about 15 years ago. But it was at the time it was, you know, kind of the, you know, showing their feet of clay. Basically, the Squadron Supreme miniseries was what would happen if the JLA decided they wanted to remake the world into a utopia. You know, because they have the power to do that.
I might have to come back and read that.
Yeah, it's an interesting read. It's a little dated, you know, being from 85.
Well, you know, Watchmen's pretty dated, too.
But the concepts still hold up.
Yeah.
And it's one of those classics, you know, that...
Okay.
And I only know really about Watchmen because I saw the movie and really loved the movie. Yeah. And then when I sort of, you know, as you sort of read things and stuff comes through on the internet as you're, you know, sort of watching and reading... Yeah. I got these little backstories about stuff. I have never read the comic, but I plan to.
I hate the movie.
Oh, well, I liked it, but bet you reading the comic, I'll probably go back and go, what?
Much the same way we disliked the Kick-Ass movie after we read the book.
Well, not entirely, but a little bit.
You really do read Watchmen, though. You almost don't need the pictures. there's
that's kind of how this...
Well, no, this has nothing on that, on Watchmen. Yeah. I can think back to when I was first getting back into reading comics and somebody threw me Watchmen and I really enjoyed it, but it was like, son of a bitch, this is huge amount of text.
We were all trying to read it before the movie.
Right. And I can remember thinking that, observing the panels and feeling like the words were crowding in the the characters, and the characters are like, no! like, you know, getting smashed by these giant word bubbles.
Ah, the good old days.
That may be one we need to revisit for this podcast.
Oh, man.
Sure, I could pull out my
take 100 years to read.
Especially, I'll give you guys the, you know, the annotations that were like phone book size.
Of course. Christ.
Awesome.
And your homework.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
We'll do that one after like a season break.
Yeah. But Hyperion.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah,
way
yeah,
back
Jesus
to the point.
Christ.
Meanwhile, back at the point. So,
why was that so funny?
Because I did it.
It's a saying you hear growing up.
Did it in the Batman announcer.
Oh yeah, no, I thought it was great,
but
I was just making sure I was laughing for the same reason you guys are laughing.
So that character has bounced around a couple of different books. You know, he's this way overpowered, totally invincible character. And in a book called The Exiles, which ran a couple of years ago, finished off, had a lot of great characters, you know, brought back a couple of dead characters from other books, you know, from all over the multiverse. And
it was a really fun book. Did you ever see the show Sliders, Justin?
No.
I remember that show.
Mm. Where they would jump back and forth into different realities. That's what the Exiles were.
Yeah. So,
interesting.
Yeah, the superhero version of Sliders. So when they pull up Hyperion in this book, he is a little bit more of a dick at first. And then over the course of a couple of issues, he suddenly develops quite a god complex. Now that he's able to jump from universe to universe, he wants to take over one. You know, have his own world.
Is that where, because I know that there's a few panels where he's surrounded by these little sort of striped children-looking things, and he's sort of, you know, the impression I got was that he had this great loss at some point in his past.
Oh yeah,
and this was his way of.
He's never had a home. He's never had a people. Hmm. You know, just like Superman. So I think that's where the King Hyperion character came in, the really evil one who wanted to and eventually tried to take over the entire multiverse.
That's like in the third trade, right?
It was around issue 50, so.
Oh, of?
Of the Exiles?
Oh, Exiles. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought we were still talking about Avengers. Yeah, sorry about that, Joe.
Oh, but yeah, in the Avengers, yeah, he comes when they get AIM out of the Savage Land after they're trying to screw around with one of the evolution bombs that the Mars bad guys dropped on Earth. Then Hyperion finds all these little native people that have popped out of the evolution bomb. And looks like he kind of adopts them in some
Yeah, that was sort of a very confusing scene for me because they showed that. And it seemed like, oh, Hyperion's doing something kind of weird and almost devious over here. And then bing, on to the next thing, and they just didn't talk about it after that.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, oh, well, all right.
They've left a lot of cliffhangers in this one.
Yeah. You know,
Doom finding the piece of the other planet.
Yeah.
What were some of the other ones? The weird Hyperion thing.
I mean, there must be a absolutely epic and grand plan for all the stuff that's going on here, because there are so many things going on, and there's so many different little microcosms of the story that could easily spin off and be the focus.
Yeah, I think for the most part they've finished off this story arc to start Infinity.
Yeah,
because it looks like
this all kind of built up to Infinity, which is started last week.
Yeah.
So I think it might be better for us when after Infinity wraps up to revisit the whole thing. It'll give us, you know, some extra time in a couple months to plow through, you know, Avengers at our own pace and to check out the Infinity one.
And you'll read Infinity as it comes out.
Yeah. For the most part, I really have enjoyed the new Avengers and Avengers stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's Hickman is very grandiose, you know, big cosmic event type things.
Yeah, he wants to do big Bendis stories.
Yeah. And, you know, so I've you know, I enjoyed it, but I definitely can understand where people would be a little off-put and a little lost, especially coming in as a new readers.
Yeah, I think that as much as I did enjoy aspects of it, I found myself, setting aside the fact that I'm not real familiar with some of the things in there, I did find the storytelling to be so ambitious in its grand scope of these big cosmic events and that being the focal point of the story, that I felt a little bit like the interpersonal characterization of all the different heroes seemed to be, not that it was not there, because it was, but it was lacking or just took a back seat, I guess.
Yeah.
It almost felt like Hickman realized that and was like, oh yeah, let me just throw in Spider-Man being a dick to these two guys and eating their lunch. And then,
right. And that's the other thing. I was like, why is Spider-Man being a jerk?
Yeah, but it's just like, it felt like that scene didn't have any bearing on the story that was going on. They just threw that in there.
And then
just to have a little more characterization. Then
I explained, well, the reason why they did that is because in Spider-Man's book, Peter Parker is now,
his
body's being controlled by Dr. Octopus's brain. So it's basically showing that this is Dr. Octopus and he's not a dick. He's a dick. He's not Peter Parker.
Right. But what I mean is that, like, that sort of stuff, that character to character, personal relationships and story and character development, instead of the grand scale cosmic event development, seemed lacking a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like it was almost thrown in there at odd times where it didn't feel like it made sense. It wasn't like, okay, we just finished with this big arc of the story, and now we're back at the Avengers Tower, and we're gearing up for this next thing, and everybody's there together, and now we're going to have some kind of people rubbing each other the wrong way because you've got this big group of powerful guys. It's like there's a big thing happening, and then in the middle of that scene, they clip over to Spider-Man being a cock,
and
then they go right back. It's like, what?
And for me, I enjoyed it, you know, because I was like, oh, it's showing that it's Dr. Octavius is taking over Spider-Man. It's not Peter. And, you know, tying the continuities in together where it was like you and Justin would be like, what the fuck's going on?
Well, it doesn't even seem like any of the other Avengers notice. Like, how come?
Yeah, I'm wondering how no one else is picking up on this, that Spider-Man's gone through this huge personality shift. And
he's always been kind of a snarky little shit.
Yeah, but now
this is just, but you don't get the cock.
You don't get that from the movies at all. And that's been the only experience I had.
And that's been the biggest probably misstep of the movies, except for maybe the most recent one, where he was kind of actually being a snarky little shit. Because that's sort of his deal. He's always making fun of and taunting to an unreasonable level all of his, you know, enemies. Like, he talks so much smack in fights.
Yeah, there's always a little bit of, you know, superhero banter going on in fights. But for Spider-Man, it's always just, nee-na-na-na-na.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, you don't get that from the movies at all. At least not the Tobey Maguire.
No, not those.
Is it Tobey Maguire? Not the Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, the Andrew Garfield, that's right.
Or maybe that's Sam Raimi's, you know, that's Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Well, the most recent one, I felt like they finally got Peter Parker right-ish, at least. Much closer. Too,
yeah.
But yeah, it's just, anyway, I wasn't even so much concerned with the driving home the point that he was Doc Ock, and that, I mean, that's fine, that makes sense, and it's good to do that, but just like where they put that part of the story seemed like it was interjected into something that was happening somewhere else, was totally unrelated, and that little bit didn't add to or move the story forward at all. It was just a little characterization, but it seemed kind of placed in an odd position, storyline-wise. And it just was kind of like, what? Yeah. Why did we feel the need to do that right there? I mean, cool. I'm glad that I get to know the characters a little better because I felt like I didn't know who the hell anybody was. Even if they're brand new or not, it's nice to have some, you know, personality show through.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was kind of like, but why was that right there? And it just felt like it was kind of all over the place a little bit with the tone. It's like all it is it seems like this kind of hammering, like, big bad shit is happening. Big bad shit is happening. We need more guys. This is a big deal. But then, you know,
a lunch break.
Well, yeah. Well, then, like, why do we care about the characters, though? You know what I mean? Like, sometimes that's a problem, is when it goes to be such a big, big level, we lose sight of the characters themselves and the character development. And that's why any story is compelling. If the story, if this big, terrible catastrophe is happening to a bunch of people we don't know and or give a shit about, then nobody cares. You know, but if we feel like a personal connection with the characters and then you put them in a shitty situation, all of a sudden it's compelling. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. That's always the problem I've had with a lot of fantasy writing, is they focus really intently on this whole huge, you know, war and all the political intrigue, and they forget to mention that, oh, yeah, these people have this rich history, this character grew up like this, and that's the reason that they're acting. Yeah, it's almost all the time lost.
It's like all world building, no character development.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that, again, I kind of spun out of control with my observation there, and it was really more of a minor complaint, because on the whole, it was definitely very entertaining, but I did feel like it was, you know, on the teeter-totter, leaning a little bit more towards world-building focus to a fault than, you know, and having a good balance of characterizations also.
For me, between the two books, the two trades, I really enjoyed this.
Which is?
This Avengers. Is the Avengers. I enjoyed it more because I really liked the story a lot better. I thought that the, you know, it was very interesting that they were trying to sort of seed Earth with this better version, and I thought there was some really cool stuff. Plus, I liked some of the, there's a couple of moments where, I don't know her name exactly, but there's one particular character, she's sort of like in the cornfield, she puts this mask on.
Smasher.
That's a, okay, so she's the Smasher for the sub, she's some guard, like.
No, the Imperial Guard.
Thank you, Imperial Guard. And like, she does a good job and gets promoted, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. So it gave some backstory on some of the characters.
Is the Imperial Guard kind of like the Green Lantern Corps sort of like feeling, or?
Yeah, they're like the special forces of their particular planet.
Okay.
Or empire. Yeah.
But I actually was like, I would like to read, I'd like to get more involved, like see more about her, because
yeah, her character was like really cool.
It was a really interesting thing.
And they did a really good job building that particular character. If not any of the others really, but they really blew up on her.
Yeah, I wanted to see more and more about her.
Now, there was one line when she was talking to her old granddad and he was giving her, you know, Captain America's card. One of his lines.
No more cages.
No, no, no. This one almost even made me a little misty.
Really?
I will admit to it. So he's telling her, heroes make others believe they can do great things. Heroes make heroes.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'm like, wow, that hit
now,
on
who
some,
is he?
I think he was just in the war with Cap
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Huh. Just an old guy.
Oh, it almost felt like he was somebody we should recognize.
Yeah, I felt that too when I was reading it. I'm like, who is this? But I don't think it was.
Yeah, because he says that you have hero. He said to his daughter, that you have hero in your blood, you know? And it's kind of like, who is this guy?
Yeah, this goes generation to generation.
Right.
But the father didn't seem to have any of it or didn't know.
Right. And the grandfather, you know, evidently, I mean, now, because that was one of the things I was going to ask you guys. Like, is the grandfather some superhero from a while ago that I'm supposed to recognize?
Well, damn, we might have to look him up.
Then. Yeah. Maybe we'll just have to keep reading.
Yes. And or you can, if you know who we're talking about, then you can write us in on Waterfront Comics, go to the contact page and send us a forum, send us an email.
This one will be a little harder than what the BQE is.
Yes, yes.
Well, I think we're going to give this like an incomplete right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was really enjoyable, but I'd like to see where it's continuing to go and what happens after Infinity. We'll kind of give it an incomplete for there, and then we'll just keep reading and see where it's going.
The story is definitely interesting. If you're at all willing to jump into it, please do. And now that the Infinity started, it's probably a good spot to jump into it.
One more question. Why is Hulk wearing armor?
Because armor's cool.
Well, it looked like they had armor specifically made for Hulk that would
grow. Because he, at one point, he's Banner. He's just plain old Bruce Banner.
Hulk perpetually has good lines, which is funny because he doesn't talk much. But I can remember them, scene where...
Like, what the hell am I supposed to do now?
Smash!
Right.
They gave him armor in his new series for whatever reason. Just because armor's cool.
Yeah. Okay.
I think I missed that issue where they switched him over to Armor Hulk.
Yeah. Armor Hulk.
I got to order that for me, by the
way. We have them all downstairs. And
you know what I'm going to invent? You're going to love this.
Uh-oh.
We've already heard of some of your invention ideas, so
I'm going to remember
this is a family-friendly show.
Sure it is.
So I really like the book. For the most part. But it is a dense read.
Yeah.
If you want to know my invention, I think you probably have to email me at askmetalhead.com. You can go to askmetalhead.com, go to the contact form, and I'll tell you my invention there. because apparently this is a family-friendly show. Even
though, this is getting
we better stop. I'm sure this is all getting cut out anyway. But,
if you do come back next week, we're going to be talking about something that's a little more new reader-friendly, accessible. I'm toying with the idea of us jumping into Astro City, as it's one of my favorite comics, and every issue is pretty new reader-friendly, so we'll put it up on the show notes what's going to happen, and we'll see everybody next week.
Later.
Later.
We have a train break.
There it is.